Glenn, if you would, could you do the roll call, please?
Yes, certainly. We've got Paul Dias, the leader of the group, Mike O'Connor, Business Constituency, James Bladel, Registrar, Kevin Erdman, IPC, Michael Collins, Business Constituency, and Mike Rodenbach, also Business Constituency and the liaison to the council, with Marika Koenigs and myself from staff.
And the regrets again for the record, Glenn?
Sorry, and the regrets for the record are Sebastian Bachelot, who is the ALAC representative, Barbara Steele, registry, and Adam Eisner, a registrar from TUCOS.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back. Here we are again talking about the transfer policy. As we were chuckling before we started the recording, checking the public comments list, we've only had one comment so far, and I'm not sure how constructive it necessarily was. A registrant complaining that somebody took his name after he forgot to renew it for well over a month. Sorry, read your contract. But we will continue to monitor that list, of course. I would also remind and encourage discussion about the template that we've put out for all of our constituencies. I know, speaking for the registrar constituency, that we do have an active dialogue underway. Hope all the others do as well. And as a reminder, the deadline for those comments are no later than the 3rd of October. That's a little over, what is it, about 3 weeks now? 3 weeks remain. Pardon, 2.5 weeks, so the clock is ticking. For today's call, if I could, excuse me, Mike O'Connor, James, anybody else who was on the call, the separate subgroup call, last Thursday, for those who have not had opportunity to listen to the recording and or please just share with the group the kind of state of your findings, if we might expect any sort of documentation, a revised workflow chart, anything like that you could share with the group. I think that would be very useful for the rest of us now.
This is Mike O'Connor. Let me jump in. I wrote a sort of a summary email to the list and viewed that as the state of play in terms of documentation. I think the call was quite productive, very lively, and we gave ourselves some action items. The first observation is that we realized that the process flow diagrams that Marika found were great. However, they were customer-facing process flows, and because of that, tend to mask a lot of variability that goes on in the back office part of it, which makes a lot of sense. We certainly expect that customers would be pretty confused by the fact that there are many different ways to get things done. But one of the actions that we gave ourselves, especially some of the registrar participants, were going to go back and see if they could dig out some documentation that might give us a better view of what's going on in the back office. The difficulty with that is that there's a lot of proprietary information in those flows, and so folks weren't sure whether they were going to be able to come up with much. And I don't know that we really gave ourselves a deadline. It would probably be a good idea to ping group again and sort of see how we're doing. So anyway, I think the next big observation is that, at least in terms of exchanging email addresses, it would appear, and again we want to confirm this, but it would appear that there's a difference between thick registries and thin registries with regard to exchanging email information. It looks like EPP-based registries and the registrars that use them already have an automated mechanism to do this.
Mike, this is James.
Yeah, go ahead.
I did investigate that a little bit internally and learned that there is a significant variance in how much information one can get over an EPP info command if you're not currently the registrar of record. So that in those cases, even still, who is at a minimum is used either to augment or as the sole source of information to get the transfer contact information. So
that's a helpful update.
But this is Michael Collins. Can we presume by that, though, that the mechanism is there that might be modified to provide more information?
James?
Absolutely.
That's a question, not necessarily to you, James, but just kind of the group as a whole.
And that's absolutely correct, Mike. Michael, sorry.
No problem.
I'm Mikey.
Okay. Yes, it is there, and if you are the registrar of record, an info command, and again, I hate to speak in absolutes because there is a significant variation between different registries, even amongst the thick registries. The who is the info command would, for the registrar of record, provide a just about every data field that the registrar can manipulate.
And just a question, and this once again is probably better put to someone that runs a thick registry, but could not that information also be provided to any registrar that happens to have the auth code? I think that might provide the security to keep just anyone from getting that information, but and help to tie it to a transfer function.
An excellent point.
We might want to capture that question.
Yeah, yes, Mikey, I'm trying to jot this down quickly, but Michael, it might be easiest if you could just dash that note off to the list. As you heard at the beginning, Barbara Steele couldn't be here today, but I know she monitors the list and will probably listen to the MP3 as recording as well. But for our record, and again, so that we capture all of this in our report later on, it helps to have things in writing as well. Just a very quick
I will
note.
Be happy to.
Thank you. It would be great. That way we can get a discussion going there and get it fleshed out.
Well, this is Kevin. I have a question on that point. Would it be possible to mandate what access would be provided by that info command? You noted that there was a variation among the registries about how that is actually handled, and would that be something that would be in the purview of our recommendations to require through the registrar agreement that full access be given to that sort of info command with appropriate credentials?
You know, that's an excellent question, Kevin. When Michael dashes his note out, you could please respond to it. I will also go back to counsel. I would think that that's fair within our mandate, our charter. Question one is, is there a way for registrars to make the data available to one another, the registrar email address available to one another? I think it's fair enough for us to certainly look at it. Of course, if we come out with a strong recommendation that it should be done in a certain way and that would become binding on registries, that may be more problematic because then we're asking for a policy change that's going to also lead to reconfiguration of certain systems. It might get a little trickier, but I think it's certainly well within our mandate to address the issue, to identify it in our report, and make a recommendation if we believe a certain thing, certain best practice should be adopted across the board.
And I'll watch for the messages on the list, but to respond to Michael's question, I think that some of that may be already occurring, that if you pass along the auth info code, you are given the information as though you were the registrar of record. The thing is that I'm trying to think of the process here, and would the auth info code be available to the gaining registrar at that point in the process? That might be something we'll have to take a look at.
My experience is that most registrars, including GoDaddy, require you to provide the auth code as a customer desiring to transfer in. They require the auth code up front. So
yes.
As the registrar that wants to transfer my domain name, I have to provide it to the gaining registrar, so they should have it.
Right, but that's also one of the reasons why they're looking for the registrant email in the first place, correct? To send them the auth info code.
No, the gaining registrar does not send the auth info code. The losing registrar would have to send the auth info code. And once I would have to go to the losing registrar. I guess they call it registrar of record. I'm always confused by that term. The registrar of record has to provide to the registrant the auth info code. And then the registrant who wants to transfer to the new registrar takes that auth info code and submits it to the new registrar. So the new registrar has the auth info code, and then could use that to acquire the registrant email address and then send it confirmation email to the registrant. So I think that we would be better off with the flowchart that we started to talk about last week. I can see now.
Did you have any luck finding any of the back office charts in your...
No, unfortunately, one of the principles that I wanted to discuss that with was not available last week. I will continue to look into that and confirm that sort of thing is open for public discussion.
Yeah, or, you know, even with big chunks of it blacked out, it would...
Right. Better than nothing.
Yeah, better than nothing, and that's great.
Yeah. And I'll go back to Network Solutions as well. I know who to speak to, and we'll have a couple data points this way.
You know, I think the main thing there is just to get a couple of examples to start from rather than starting from scratch. And so once we've got one or two, I think we could either pull one together ourselves, or we could hand the ball to Marika and let her sort of consolidate it into something we could work from. Because having that back office version of a chart would help this conversation a lot. Sort of which party gets which piece of information when, I think, is the question of a chart like that.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful, Mikey, but as just echoing what James said, some of this, there may be some redacted documents.
Yeah.
Some blackouts, because certain things we'll be sensitive to. And ultimately, not for the sake of the, we want to advance the work of this particular working group, but for security reasons. Because if we're, publishing this stuff, bad guys start figuring out, this could become the
yeah.
definition of social engineering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the map by which people could break in, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to carry on now, or
Do you have more guys? I mean, this is very, very helpful. I know a good number of the folks that are part of the group were on the call, but for those who couldn't make it, so certainly, if there's more.
I think there's only one more big conclusion that I put in that email. That is that we may have a fork in our recommendation, in that if it turns out that EPP is a vehicle. And we have to confirm some, all this stuff that we've just been talking about. But if that turns out to be a vehicle to exchange the address, then we may have recommendations that have two parts, one for thick registries and one for thin registries, because thin registries can't They don't have the information they have to rely on. Who has emerged as the operational glue between registrars during these transfer processes in registries? And we spent a fair amount of time sort of discovering that, and I think that a question for this group is, or at least one that comes to my mind, is the problem posed by who is being such a radioactive topic in ICANN, and at the same time being the operational glue for transfer, presents a difficult situation for making recommendations. But I think we have probably a fork here, where we've got one set of recommendations for EPP registries and another for thin registries. Probably the last major point that came up.
Okay. Just for the record, Mikey, everybody's running EPP now. That's just the software, registry software. You mean thick and thin, the distinction between the two.
Oh, really? Does EPP run in a thin registry as well?
Yeah. It's just the software, extensible provisioning protocol. And for sure, we will be careful in our report to define all the acronyms that we use, much like we did in our template. Just reading the summary email, and again, recommend everybody look this over. This Mikey sent this out on Thursday at 1:43. You say that some of us are all finding out more about this. Who were the someones, and what is it that you are trying to find out?
Someones are folks who work at registrars for the most part, and what they were going to go back and do is find that back office set of flows rather than customer facing.
Okay. Yeah.
Should have been clearer about
that. No problem. And I'm part of that now as well. I just committed to doing that. All right. Well, thank you all. This is very useful. Did you all have discussions? Will you have a subsequent call? Were you going to wait to see, discuss it on the regularly scheduled call and take it from there? What was the thinking about next steps?
I think what we were thinking was that we would see how the information gathering went and then bring it back to this group rather than... We didn't schedule another call.
No problem. Well, speaking for myself and any others that have action items, I know I just need a little time to do this. I would ask if it's okay with the rest of the group, maybe we come back at our next week's regularly scheduled Tuesday call, present the information. If we can post it to the email list sooner, certainly do that. But by no later than a week from today, try to have answers for the group, and then we can determine if we can... what our next steps will be. If that seems okay, I know between now and then a lot's going on for myself, so I would appreciate a week's worth of time to get some answers to these questions.
I think that'd be fine. If you'd like, I'll send a note to the list sort of reflecting that so that the other folks who have similar action items aren't on the call today can...
Yeah, great idea, especially our registry reps, because they certainly need to weigh in on this. That would be excellent. Thank you, Mikey. All right, then. Excellent. Well, very, very useful. I hope everybody is helping bring certain things into focus, and obviously there are other areas that we still need to explore, but we will return to it next week and or on the list in the interim, and we'll certainly look for the inputs from registrar and registry reps for those outstanding issues that we still have to address. All right, then. For the rest of the call, not sure how folks would like to proceed. In our discussions last week, we were still on more or less addressing issue one. Some of our other questions may have taken us a bit off topic, but it's all been good. Looking back on the notes, not really sure exactly where we broke last week. I believe there was a question that was hanging, and I'm sorry. My notes, they weren't very clear. If anybody recalls or has a question from last week's discussions, or let's just open it up even broader, are we comfortable with where we are right now in terms of our discussion of issue one, the need for additional information that we've already discussed, and looking ahead to next week, hopefully having some more answers? If there's more we'd like to discuss, happy to entertain it. If not, perhaps we start looking at issue number two.
This is Mike O'Connor again. I think we probably need to drill a little bit deeper into the sore tooth of who is for thin registry stuff. Just decide how far into recommendations about who is we want to dive. Because what's emerged from that call is that even though WHOIS has a whole lot of radioactive privacy issues around it and a very locked up discussions in ICANN, it is also the operational vehicle for communications between registrars in registries. And it's sort of an elephant in the room. I think we need to spend a little bit of time just deciding what the degree to which we want to make proposals that actually directly bear on who.
Okay, a very fair question, and open it up to anybody. What are the thoughts on how we will address in our recommendations any things that will impact who is as it currently exists, or recommendations for changes in the way who is information is used to facilitate transfer requests?
You know, perhaps, this is James, perhaps we could point that out, acknowledge it, but I wanted to go back to our earlier discussion of how far we wanted to step into the quicksand that WHOIS has become. I think acknowledging that, you know, perhaps here's another area where this is the potential consequences or side effects of any changes to WHOIS policy, and something that needs to be taken into consideration during that group, but I wouldn't really be comfortable going too far into that subject. Just my opinion.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I share your views, James, and not that I'm punting on the issue, Mikey, but I think it may help to have this conversation after next week's discussion of the information we find, when it's a little clearer to all of us what exactly is being done behind the scenes with the WHOIS information, where are the pain points. It might be easier to have the discussion once we have a clear sense of what we might be recommending in terms of changes, if there are any changes that the group may want to recommend. My gut feeling right now is that we all recognize it is WHOIS is such a sensitive issue, but rather than kind of beating around on possibilities, maybe it's worth having a discussion once we have a little more information within the group and we can we have a clear sense of what it is we might identify as recommended changes, and then figure out, okay, how do we couch those? How far do we go? Do we even want to go there, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, and one idea that I had is to give it a new name or add a name to the pile and call it something different so that...
I'm sorry, Mikey, what is the it?
Who is.
Okay.
Something like operational dash who is, or I don't know, some way to sidestep the morass, because I agree, walking into the quicksand is not something that I would at the same time, because there are such huge operational needs being met in that system, I hate to miss the opportunities that it presents. So I think that your notion of waiting a week and seeing what the pain points are is a good one. Well, I could go with that. But yeah. I think at some point we do need to circle back around.
Agreed. And
we want to go in.
Certainly. And remember, everyone, that we have already had a good discussion on this within the group, and we did include touching on who is in our template. So, we would expect to see some recommendations, thoughts, et cetera, coming from both the public and from the various constituencies, and having a discussion within our group on how we will entertain those thoughts, makes perfect sense. I mean, we can't avoid it. I just think with a little bit more time, it might help us focus the discussion once we have it, once we're ready to have it.
Yeah, I agree.
It seems reasonable.
Okay. Well then, if we're going to wait until next week for some of these other issue one related discussions, we'd like to start talking about our second charter question. That is the need for options for electronic authentication due to security concerns and use of email addresses. When we first kicked off the working group, we talked about at a very high level, the questions about what registrars may be using any sort of security tokens, for example, or any mechanism. We've made it very clear within the registrar constituency and the call for comments that we're seeking examples, folks who are doing something like this to step forward, that we can go back and sort of study what is the model. Is it a good one? Is it something we might want to recommend? To this point, there's been nobody's come forward, so I'm not sure if that's just busy with other things, or perhaps this question was attributing something that's not necessarily in existence. We'll have to wait to see. But for the rest of us here today, are there thoughts, any particular topics or issues we want to raise surrounding our issue number two? The thundering silence. For me, and that's perfectly fair. From a personal perspective, I have a feeling that this particular issue, I'm hoping will develop more discussion once we get the first round of comments in, because right now it's me almost a sort of yes or no, and I'm not sure exactly how much more we can say at this point, unless somebody has a particular thought and we want to tease it out. I'm perfectly content just sort of putting it on the back burner for now and waiting to see what other inputs we get from the community at large.
Paul, this is James. I think that's a very appropriate approach. I'm actually curious to see what we get back on this question. I don't really have anything to add to the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, James.
This is Mikey. I think the one that leaps out at me that we might want to at least put a placeholder in.
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here.
Hello?
Gotcha, Mikey. It's okay. Just a little background noise.
Oh, okay. There are lots of sort of out-of-band authentication systems available. The kind of old granddaddy of the bunch is one called SecureID, in which basically people are given a credit card-sized gizmo that has a number that changes every minute. And when you log on to a system, you have your password, and then you type in the number of the SecureID guest. And what that number is. And so it provides a very secure way to do password-based authentication with an out-of-band mechanism. And those are available for automated systems as well. There's basically a whole huge body of literature on that. And I think that one of the sort of underlying themes of this question is whether or not we should recommend that some sort of system like that be embraced by the registrar registry community in order to strengthen the authentication that's being done now. It would essentially give a three-way authentication because you'd have the auth info code, the email address, and then this out-of-band cycle. And I haven't actually run off and done research on the current state of affairs. I bought one of these 20 years ago when we were curing the payroll system at the University of Minnesota. And you know, I'm sure that the state of the art has advanced a lot. But it's extremely secure. I mean, it's a wonderful gizmo for that sort of thing. And it might be one that we at least want to put a placeholder in for at this stage of the game. And start doing a little research on if nothing else.
Okay. So, Mike, you're envisioned, and I realize maybe...
pretty antique. I'll do my best. But,
but you would envision that registrars would have this token or registrants?
Oh, no, registrars.
Okay.
I would expect, you know, I can't imagine that millions and millions of registrants would be interested in... No, I was thinking more in terms of authenticating between registrars.
Okay.
So, you know, a population of hundreds would be subscribed to this rather than a population of millions.
Okay. A couple thoughts here, guys. Mikey, I'm not sure if the way I read issue two, the concern that's being addressed is, and this clearly is what the SSAC was writing about, is that the registrant's email addresses get compromised, get hacked, and then all sorts of bad things happen to their domain names. I don't believe the focus of the concern was on the communications between losing and gaining registrars.
Okay.
If anybody reads it differently, please let me know, but it also just stands to reason in terms of real-world experience. And that the focus is on the communications between the domain name registrant and their registrar of record, the losing registrar, getting the auth info code and filling out the form of authorization to initiate the process, that those are very important processes, sensitive and critical processes, and that the issue here is there a way that we can beef up the security at that level?
And it may be that there are newer, cheaper versions. The one I was describing would be way too expensive for registrants. But there may be, and this may be the way this question is phrased, is to go off and research what out-of-band options are available that could scale to a bunch of people like.
Okay, and again, we're... The second observation I was going to have is that, all right, so that if we're not talking communications between registrars, but rather the registrar record and their customers, you're necessarily talking about a one to a very many kind of model. And I feel pretty strongly that I can, and this is ultimately a policy development process working group, I can should... be very, very slow to ever put itself in a position where it starts recommending technologies. Because, as we've already said, technologies change very quickly. I personally think that this is something that is probably better left to market forces. Registrars who feel very strongly about this can come up with solutions for their customers and can then
you know, promote, advertise that as a competitive differentiator. But you know, my personal view as a network solutions rep is that I do not feel comfortable with the working group coming back saying we've recognized or identified, researched, here are three different security solutions that could be put in place. We recommend ICANN, you know, tell registrars to adopt one of these. I just think that that's a very, very problematic course of action to take. And again, I'm speaking as Network Solutions. As the chair, I'm willing to entertain the discussions, whatever the group thinks, but would also ask to think about the precedent-setting value. Should the group do this, what's to, you know, have folks down the road looking back and saying, well, you know, that transfer working group said it was okay to recommend technologies in some case, and all of a sudden it morphs into completely unimaginable things for future groups recommending technologies. Just really
John,
think that may be a problematic.
I think we can take our lead from the way that question is framed. It doesn't ask what the technologies are. It says whether there's a need. And I think we could stay within our purview and take a crack at that. I agree. I don't want to get into recommending technologies. That's way outside the bounds of policymaking group. But I think the question leaves open the avenue of discussing whether there's a need for that. And I think that what that might wind up with at a minimum is some sort of recommendation that says, well, before we know what the need is, we need to know how often the problem occurs. How often does the purely email-based authentication cycle get broken into? The answer is not very often, then the need is low. But if the answer is, well, it happens a fair amount, then the need is high. And then the recommendation simply acknowledges the need. So a recommendation that I think we could make is ask for a study of that to determine how bad the problem is. I don't think this is a lot like the fast flux discussion, not a real good group to actually conduct that research. But I think we could recommend that the research get done.
Good points. How do the others feel?
Paul, this is James.
James?
I just want to echo some of your sentiments that I wouldn't be very comfortable with any kind of a policy that mandates very specific particular technology adoption. And from a security standpoint, I think it's probably desirable that we don't have a monolithic approach, just because then that would make it easier to, you know, you break one method, you've broken them all. And if registrars are implementing and maintaining confidentially their internal security procedures, I think there's some benefit to that. I wouldn't have too much of an issue with a very generic statement such as, you know, ICANN recommends that there be a communication method other than email or addition to email, but stopping right there and not specifying what that other alternative communication channel would be or how it should be implemented. But beyond that, I think that you're absolutely right that it would be an area that would be fraught with precedent.
Yeah, I stand duly corrected on that. I like the idea, though, of going as far as you just said, James. And again, I'm not even sure that that's justified because it's difficult to know how often this happens. If it turns out that in however millions of domains there are out there, this only happens 10 times, then the need is probably not very high. If, on the other hand, it happens 100,000 times, then I think there is a need. And, you know, absence of that kind of information, it's really hard to answer that question.
Paul, was what I mentioned, was that, do you feel that was compatible with your concerns, or is that still beyond or outside of something you would be comfortable or a recommendation or some hypothetical policy?
You know, James, until we reach the point where we're ready to start clacking away at our keyboard and writing up our report, I'm completely open-minded about it. I think what you were saying is going to be fine. Devil will be in the details. How do we actually phrase that for the written record? And we just need to be sensitive that we don't go beyond the mandate. And I don't think that's a problem. I think everybody's sensitive about the boundaries. And Mikey, I probably, you know, was putting words in your mouth. You did not carry it as far as I was saying. I just wanted to kind of set an end zone there, you know, marking the field of play that we don't go beyond. Just speaking, having spoken to my colleagues in customer service that handle transfer issues, one thing that they're concerned with issue two, when they first, you know, I first raised it with them, is that they said too often this fundamentally becomes a compliance issue. Because too often some registrars are not collecting or cannot produce a form of authorization.
Right.
So when there's a controversy about a transfer, we forgot, or, you know, there's any number of excuses. That's just a basic fundamental ICANN compliance issue. It doesn't even get into electronic authorization, all the rest, authentication, I should say. So I think there's an excellent discussion, definitely open-minded about, you know, seeking more information and whatnot. But kind of go back to my first thought, let's, you know, see, keep an eye on the public comments list, and very importantly, we'll see what, you know, constituency positions have to say about this. It will help guide our discussion. How far do we need to reach? How far do we need to go? To your point, Mikey, everybody may go, this really isn't a big enough problem. There are bigger fish to fry. We move on. But if it is an often enough occurrence, okay, then what is going on? Merely compliance issues or fundamental problems with the system, in which case, what can we do to you know, help correct that or address that? Any other thoughts? Mike Rodenbaugh or Kevin, anybody else have any inputs on issue two?
This is Michael Collins. I have a question as much as input, I suppose. I don't really have an answer about how often it occurs, but let me ask you, if using an email address from, you know, from an expired domain name that has been reacquired by a new domain owner, or just acquiring like a Hotmail or Yahoo email address that has been formerly used by an admin contact, you know, is that hacking? Or is hacking only more sophisticated? I don't know whether these methods of electronic authentication would function. I'm not technically savvy enough to know whether if I acquired an email address through registering a domain name that had been previously used as an admin contact and was still listed in who is as an admin contact for domain name or a domain name or domain name. Is that hacking?
Fair question, Michael. Anybody?
Would electronic authentication prevent someone from using an email address that they had, that they had the right to use, that they were the registrant for? Would that work? Because I don't know how often it still occurs. What I do know is the people that have been interested in hijacking domain names, one technique that is fairly commonly known is that people shop for domain names that are expiring, that are dropping, that are used as admin contact in other domain names. And they also do the same thing with Yahoo and Hotmail addresses. They'll just attempt to register, acquire a domain name. Because I think if you don't use a Hotmail or Yahoo account after X period of time, it it'll just expire. It'll become available again to a new user. And I think there's people that do look for opportunities to acquire these email addresses in an effort to acquire the information that they would need to get the auth code, et cetera, to be able to acquire, hijack domain names. And some valuable domain names have been taken in that manner. I don't know how often it occurs.
It's Mike Rodenbaugh. I've got a thought on that. It's my understanding that Nominet in the UK has implemented some sort of electronic authorization process. In other words, email is not enough to do a transfer there, I think. I'd like to reach out to them and ask them, you know, what kind of information they had to lead them to that decision.
Okay. Be very interested to know what they're doing so that we can understand if it's applicable to a GTLD environment. Mike, do you have a contact? Who are you thinking to reach out to?
I know that the CTO of Nominet is on the SAC, so there's at least one contact we can.
Okay. Can you reach out? Are you willing to take the lead on that?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
This is Mark. I think it might be useful to reach out to Nominet. I don't know how helpful they'll be in our situation because they have a significantly different transfer process, which is partially owned by the registry itself. So I don't know how much.
Talk to me a little bit. What's the difference?
Well, I mean they have a transfer process which can be initiated through registrars, which is a lot more complex than the GTLD transfer process. Then they have a process where you can go directly through the registry themselves, and it's literally a paper-based process where you fill out a long application to have both parties sign and document various pieces of information.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that's not the standard way that they're doing things. I think it's still by electronic authorization, but I think that they use PGP or something like that. I'm not certain. I'll have to look into it a little bit. I'll get back to the group on that.
Okay, Mike. Thanks. And Mark, yeah, I agree, and that's why I raised the issue. You know, what would the applicability be in a GTLD environment? Many CCs will have essentially their own way of doing things. But at least at this point, within the working group, as long as it's not an onerous amount of effort to research it, it's probably worth looking at because there may be some opportunities there, some best practices that we can identify and put forward. And if not, we can always say that we did make a full faith effort, good faith effort, and it was just too different, and then we're back to square one.
No, definitely. I agree.
Very good. Yeah, I realized from the ESAC report in our template, we note in the final bullet that in the report, both the .UK Nominet registry as well as the Swedish .SE registry have methods. And I don't know for .SE who we might talk to, or perhaps it's the same point of contact. If the Nominet fellow is part of ESAC, Mike, you might ask him, hey, did you also speak to your .SE colleague? And
Olaf may have a contact over there as well.
Oh, Olaf. Okay. Anybody that might be able to just give us a quick background. Again, recognizing if it's so unique, so very different, and something that is honestly just not applicable to a GTLD environment, so be it. We'll note it. But if there's some general best practices that could be adopted, great. Let's figure out what they are and bring it to the group for further discussion.
This is Marika. I'll check with Olaf when he's back from his holidays whether he has a contact at .ST.
Very good. Thank you, Marika.
This is Mikey. ESAC might just have some more generic thoughts about this, too. Have they ever explored this?
They have done a paper on domain hijacking.
That would probably be another one, Marika, to dig out of the archive and send us the link. They might have some ideas in there.
The link is there if we're on the wiki site. Issue 2, it's in the external link is in the first bullet. So we can see that report. Granted, it was written in July of 2005, so
you know, the information they're going on, a lot has happened in the interim. But and even the processes that those other CCTLD registries may be employing may have changed in the interim. But the link's there, so we can get to it. It's a fairly long report, 48 pages. But it gives us you know, some insights, and you'll recognize some of the case studies they used. They were certainly high-profile cases in their time.
I'm sorry, Paul, but it's on our main webpage?
Yeah, if you're I'm sorry, I'm not clear. Look at the template for constituency statements.
Constituency statements.
Sorry. And then there in issue two, the color is not blue. On my screen, it comes up purple, so it's a little harder to see. But
oh, yeah.
The end of that first sentence says see link, yep. And that'll take you to the report.
This is Marika again. I can check as well with Dave Piscatello, who's a staff member serving on the ESSEC, to see if there's any more recent information in relation to this issue that he might be able to share.
Oh, yeah, there's actually quite a lot on. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and then any more current thoughts would be most helpful, Marika and Mike, and when you're talking to the other colleagues. Referring us back to the old reports, there's certainly some value there, but again, something that was written 3 years plus ago, that's kind of dated information. Would love to hear, know what is being done currently. All right, everyone. By my watch, we have about 6 or 7 minutes left. I'm thinking that it might be easier to draw this one to a close a few minutes early today rather than trying to dive into issue three. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut off. Were there other thoughts on issue two, or if anybody had additional thoughts on issue one? Okay, if not, then why don't we give ourselves a break? We'll get out of here a few minutes early this week. Some of us have action items for next Tuesday's meeting. We'll bring those to the table, start with those, have further discussion then on issue one as it relates. Please, I encourage everybody, just, you know, bookmark the page for the public comments list just to, you know, be sensitive to anything folks are saying. Hopefully there will be some more feedback as the deadline gets closer. There will be more inputs there. And, you know, with that, I thank everyone for their time, and we'll look forward to seeing you all again the same time next Tuesday.
Thanks, Paul.
Very good. You all have a good day now.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. It concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.